Thank you so much to Ari and Chomtali for inviting us. I think it's very important to have caste be a topic of conversation within the greater AARI community. And we're finally getting to have these conversations. It's really important, and we are grateful for all of you to having us here. So thank you. So I'm going to start with really quick bios. To my left is Swati Sawant. Swati M. Sawant, ESQ, is a New York licensed immigration attorney and caste equity advocate. As one of the few Dalit lawyers practicing law in the United States, Swati's work is rooted in lived experience, legal advocacy, and a commitment to building systems that recognize and protect caste-oppressed communities. In 2018, Swati filed one of the first caste discrimination complaints in New York, documenting a gap in existing civil rights protections. Building on that case, Swati developed and championed New York State Bill S6531, A6920. Let's make some noise for the New York State Caste Bill. We'll be talking a lot more about it today, but this is a really consequential bill. A similar bill was vetoed in California in 2023 by Governor Gavin Newsom, even though it had passed through all rungs of legislature. And here we have another bill and a historic opportunity in New York State to make caste a protected category. Swati has worked closely with the offices of Senator James Sanders Jr. and Assembly Member Stephen Raga, and has been leading coalition efforts to advance legislation prohibiting caste discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Swati also served on the Jersey City Immigrant Affairs Commission, where she was instrumental in establishing Equality Day on April 14th in recognition of Dr. B.R. Ambedkar's legacy. Swati drafted the proclamation recognizing the day, which is commemorated annually in Jersey City by hoisting the blue flag alongside the United States flag. Swati's work reflects a deep commitment to dignity, equality, and justice for caste-oppressed communities. Pabitra Dash, on to my left, is a Dalit organizer and activist from Nepal. As a former nail technician who experienced firsthand the harsh working conditions in nail salons in New York City, she joined Adhikar in 2015 as a member. Adhikar is a worker center that serves and organizes the Nepali-speaking community. Now she is a senior organizer and membership engagement specialist at Adhikar and leads the leadership development of hundreds of workers through the nail salon organizing. Pabitra migrated from Nepal to the U.S. in 2010. Back in Nepal, she organized brick workers and worked on Dalit and indigenous group issues. Pabitra's interest in social change work began when she was 11 years old, when she began teaching Nepali language and math to Dalit adult learners back in Nepal. She currently lives in Jackson Heights, Queens, with her husband Sunil and son Supreme. And then it's me, Yashika Dutt. I'm a Brooklyn-based journalist and the author of the award-winning Coming Out as Dalit, which is widely considered among the most significant modern books on the Indian caste system. Last year, I covered New York's mayoral election as the first and the most prominent journalist to report on the rise of the South Asian community in the city as an influential voting bloc. My reporting over several months helped create a beat on the subject and was followed up in mainstream media publications like the New York Times and Politico. And my story is, I'm very happy to report, went viral globally, particularly in India. Coming Out as Dalit, my debut nonfiction memoir, won India's prestigious National Literary Honor, Sahitya Academy Yuva Puraskar, the first book by a Dalit author to win that title, and was published in the U.S. in 2024 via Beacon Press. My writing has appeared in The Times, Atlantic, Foreign Policy, New Lines, Al Jazeera, and has helped shape public policy as part of United States' first caste discrimination law in Seattle. My essays are frequently discussed in college classrooms in the US, but also in the UK, Australia, and India. And coming out as Dalit is taught in over 50 colleges and universities, including Harvard, Oxford, SOAS, and right here at CUNY. I graduated from Columbia Journalism School, and I'm working on my second book, Examining Caste in the US, also under commission from Beacon Press. So I want to tell you a little bit about how the panel will go. Each of us will talk for a few minutes about the issues that concern us most. I'm going to speak a little bit about the mayoral campaign and the building of the South Asian coalition and the absence of Dalits from that coalition. Swati will further then talk, and then Pavitra. Then we will have a couple of questions. We can talk among ourselves, and we would like for you to then ask questions from us, so we will open up for a Q&A with the audience. So please make notes and write down all the questions that come up during the conversation, and we'd be happy to answer them. So I'll go first because it is my responsibility and burden. Thanks again to Ari CUNY and the organizers for hosting this wonderful symposium. I also want to extend a heartfelt thanks to the incredible movement leader and advocate Chomp Dholi, who made sure that I submitted my application for this panel. Truly, she was like, do it. Chomp Dholi reached out to me because she had very likely encountered my reporting on the Zohran Mamdani election over the course of last year. I was the first and possibly among the most prominent journalists to pay attention to the movement that was brewing in our South Asian spaces around Zohran. I started reporting in April 2025, almost a year ago, when the Mamdani campaign was still polling in the low double digits, and most mainstream media establishments had assumed Andrew Cuomo's win as all but inevitable. I followed the campaign from that stage when the team was still mainly focused on canvassing South Asian neighborhoods to the day before the primary in June, when he returned to Ozone Park to receive a rock star welcome. Then later, I followed him inside Hindu temples, reported when he distributed sweets out of a desi shop in Jackson Heights. What was even more heartening to me, as a Dalit journalist who has written extensively about the Indian-American obsession with labeling themselves as model minorities, was that this movement was not only rooted in working-class demands, but also led by working-class communities. Folks from Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Nepal were taking time out of their jobs, many of whom were delivery workers, others who ran fruit stands and halal carts, several people who worked three jobs a day to survive in this prohibitively expensive city of ours. They made time to knock doors and talk to people about why supporting this candidate was essential. I witnessed a movement that was grassroots, not just in name, but also in ethos. It was people rising to make space for themselves in a city that runs on their underpaid labor, but often devalues their contribution and completely overlooks their needs. I saw Pakistani aunties in Midwood, many of whom who had not worked outside their homes, stand on the streets to talk to the people and convince them to vote for Zohran. I saw Bangladeshi aunties, shout out to all the aunties out there, in Kensington, talking with more moral clarity and political acumen about why they wanted to vote for this candidate than some of the highly paid consultant class currently running the Democratic establishment. And I interviewed Nepalese immigrants, many who had barely been in the country for a few years, become empowered in the democratic and constitutional rights they now hold as citizens. It was a stunning and frankly unprecedented collaboration of South Asian immigrants, one which we all know is extremely rare, given how we feel about each other back home. I mean, South Asians famously don't like each other in the subcontinent. But we came together to elect a mayor whose parents are Muslim and Hindu, with roots in Uganda and India, and who proudly identifies himself as South Asian. that collaboration and coming together of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepalese, and Sri Lankan New Yorkers wasn't just historic because it elected the first South Asian mayor of New York, but also because it led to the building of political power within a community that had so far been left out of it. Since the election of Zoran Mamdani in City Hall, South Asian New Yorkers have emerged as among the most formidable power blocks in the city. One that politicians, whether they see or beyond, can no longer afford to ignore. South Asians reshaped the city's electorate and, along with Muslim voters, represented 42.5% of the voter turnout. There is a reason why several political hopefuls have been actively courting our communities for our support, because they know that when we decide to get behind a candidate, we can move elections. But as I watched the South Asian community come into its own over the course of the last year, something constantly gnawed at me, which, despite my excitement over the growing prominence of our people, I couldn't seem to ignore. The South Asian coalition, just like the political coalitions in our countries back home, was leaving out a crucial organizing bloc that has been part of our communities from the start: Dalit and caste-oppressed New Yorkers. Caste has been a part of the South Asian communities for thousands of years. It exists in India, but also in Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka, where caste-oppressed and Dalit communities face systemic exclusion, marginalization, and access to opportunities. And this pattern clearly and evidently reflects in the immigration markup of our communities here in the U.S. and here in New York City. According to some surveys from a few years ago, more than 90% of the Indian American population identifies as being from a dominant caste, whereas another survey suggests that 8 out of 10 Hindu Americans identify as upper caste. If data around other communities and countries doesn't exist, it's most likely not because of an absence of caste or Dalit people in those communities, but rather an absence of studies that can look into this. Despite the lack of our visible political presence, Dalit New Yorkers are among the most organized political communities in the city. Dalit Sikh New Yorkers were forced to pool their resources in the 1980s to create a separate space of worship when they were denied access to the gurdwaras that already existed. The Sri Guru Ravidas Temple in Queens is a living testimony to the discrimination in our South Asian spaces. Dalit New Yorkers face discrimination at the workplace, within social settings, and housing. Caste discrimination in New York is not just a social concern. It is, in fact, a labor justice issue, which any advocates who champion those issues should and must take the time to understand. Just like the building of South Asian political power cannot remain limited to wealthy New Yorkers who are either Indian or Pakistani, and needs to include both working class voices and leadership, the same way, the political praxis of this coalition would be incomplete without Dalits. Because Dalit New Yorkers are also among the most economically and socially vulnerable and have no legal recourse when it comes to accessing justice from the discrimination that we encounter. Today, you will hear firsthand from the testimonies of my brilliant co-panelists, Swati Sawant and Pabitra Dash, about their experiences of dealing with caste exclusion in New York. And that is why we are supporting and advocating for the statewide caste protection bill, which Swati here has worked on for years to bring to fruition. If passed, this bill will make New York the first state in the country to protect caste-oppressed New Yorkers from discrimination. So I would like to use this platform to urge each and every one of you to call your elected officials and support A6920/the Senate Bill S6531, and advocate for the rights of Dalit New Yorkers. This is how we build a coalition that is truly universal. This is how we build South Asian power that is fully realized. We are only stronger when we are all together. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Pavitra Das, as he mentioned, and currently I work as a senior organizer at Adhikar, and my Adhikar family is here too to support this campaign. And I'd like to give a little bit background about Adhikar. Adhikar meaning rights in Nepali, in the only one women lead worker and community center. We are serving and organizing for the Nepali speaking community and worker rights, immigration rights, youth empowerment, access to healthcare and language justice. Most of our members are women and work in the informal sector as nail salon workers, domestic worker, taxi driver, and restaurants worker. I am also here representing the Dalit community as someone who holds that directly proud. Whenever I speak about the caste issue, and this is the perfect fit for me so that I'm here today, so I am reminded of my own story and struggles as a Dalit person. When I was 5 years old, my grandmother wanted to send me to school, but in school, I was forced to sit separately. Not only me, many of our Dalit communities, brothers and sisters have to sit separate in the school. And from a so-called high-caste student, one day I, unknowingly tossed her. And she immediately started crying and complained to the teacher. I am surprised, like, how come it happened like that early age, right? And the Dalit girl, she said, like, Dalit girl tossed me, and my teacher became very angry and beat me severely. I was on bed rest for an entire month. That was how my education began, with pain, discrimination, and fear. From a very young age, I understood what it means to be Dalit. Abuse, harassment, fear, hiding our identity, and living under dominance and discrimination. These experiences are very common in our community. That is why I started social work while I was 11 years old. I wanted to protect my community and speak against injustice. I migrated from Nepal to the United States with dreams and hope. I believe America was a country of human rights, freedom, and equality. But soon after I began working in the nail industry, I faced another painful reality. Caste discrimination is very prevalent in the Nepali community, and that type of discrimination continues to be present while people migrate here as well. And I'm a little bit shy too, because this is from my own community, from my own country. But if I say, who's going to take out this, right? So I have to take responsibility, or my organization have to take responsibility to fix this. Even in U.S., I have had co-worker in nail salon, friend and community members who, once they found out I am Dalit, have either made comments or even cut times with me. As someone who organized workers, this is a common experience for other workers who have Dalit identities as well. Adhikar has members who are nail salon workers or domestic workers who have experienced discrimination at their workplace, but due to lack of protection, have not been able to do anything. An Adhikar member was not able to get a job based on her caste. She was told by the employer that God will not be happy or would not accept water from her if she hires her. Another member lost her job. Her employer said if the client knew her caste, she lost the client and business. My mentor and former executive director, Pavitra Khati Benjamin, shared with me the story of her mother, Sita Khati, who despite being in the United States, hid her own caste identity because she feared her children would face the same discrimination and humiliation she experienced in Nepal and United States. This is continued to happen today in the United States. This is one example of thousands of family, including myself. Many people in our so-called modern and education society continue to gaslight Dalit community by saying, oh, does Dalit community face discrimination here as well? While trying to silence our stories and spread the false idea that Dalit issues do not exist in the United States. But the truth is very different. Many of our community members continue to struggle to fight housing. People cannot get rooms for a roommate. People hide their identity to survive. And the discrimination continues in a very smart and hidden way. As a Dalit activist, I believe I need to fight this with these beautiful people and whoever is listening to us today and support. In my personal life, my home has become a post office for many Dalit community members here. People use my address because they are afraid to reveal their caste identity. Every week, part of work is helping distribute letter and protecting our members for my community feel safe. This is not a long-term solution. How long I have to do this? How long I have to hide my identity? How long my community have to hide their identity? Our community has been silent long enough. We have a growing Dalit community who is ready to fight here, like we continue to fight in Nepal. Through the community building and support we are providing through Dalit groups and organizations like Adhikar, we are seeing more and more Dalit voices speak up against these injustices here and seeing policies like the anti-caste bill that protect Dalit community. It shows us our experience and not invisibilized. Thank you.
So this is what Pavitra told, how what caste discrimination looks like. I'm going to share the case that I filed in New York in 2018. So I filed with New York EOC, and they gave us right to sue letter, which confirmed the decision of New York State Division. The facts were, my client was from Nepal, and he worked in an Indian restaurant, and he was not allowed, when his caste identity was known, he was harassed, he was excluded at workplace, and he faced derogatory remarks. And the co-workers wouldn't allow him to eat with him. They would say, like, don't touch me, you are of impure blood. And this is in New York City? Yeah. And when he tolerated for many months, and then when he escalated to manager, manager said, look, instead of, like, you know, those 10 people leaving their job, it's better you leave your job. And so, but this guy had a, like, courage. He filed with New York State Division of Human Rights. And New York State Division of Human Rights order stated that they do understand this is caste discrimination, but unfortunately, caste is not defined under New York human rights law. That's why they cannot investigate this case, because it is beyond their jurisdiction. And so that is how this legislation came into picture, because there is a gap in the New York existing law. Unfortunately, the chairs in the Senate and in the Assembly, Skoufis, Stewart, Andrea Cousins, in the Assembly, Speaker Hestie and McDonald's, they are not moving this bill to the floor. They're saying, you know, it is already covered under race. Race is different than caste. They're all saying that it is included in family origin or creed. Because ancestry, at least in California, ancestry was a different category. Whereas in New York, ancestry is part of national origin. And so they are not giving our coalition partners chance to meet them and explain them. They are refusing appointments with us. And we got 11 senators who co-sponsored the bill. We have 23 assembly members who co-sponsored the bill. We have many organizations who are supporting, including Union, including Bar Association, Asian American Bar Association, South Asian Bar Association, and many organizations from the United States, faith-based organization, New York nonprofits. Recently, United Nations Special Rapporteur, she issued a statement in support of this bill, who is also a Dalit woman. And still, they are not moving this bill to the floor. We have now like 2 weeks to make that happen. And so, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Pavitra and Swati, for those powerful testimonies. This is how, it's a clear and lucid example of how caste discrimination happens in our communities. I want to share something with you. I have been writing extensively on caste for a long time, even in the U.S., and I recently wrote an article that came out in PRISM. It came out just last week, and it was about the bill, and that article has created an insane stir online, especially among Hindu right communities, about why caste is necessary and how we're making these issues up and how caste doesn't exist, but we are trying to get equality because we love fighting, apparently. And that's those are the kind of absurd notions around this bill about, you know, we're just making this up for attention. This is also something that as women, as Dalit women, we get called out a lot when we talk about our rights, when we talk about issues that impact us, we're doing it for attention. So it's a real issue, and I hope that listening to Pavitra and Swati will give you a very clear picture of how it functions within our communities. I'm going to go into a couple of questions between three of us, and then, like I said, we can open the floor. My first question is to Swati. You've been practicing as an attorney, an immigration attorney, for decades in the New York tri-state area. And you talked about your experience with caste and this person who was a Nepali restaurant worker who was told that he's of impure blood. They wouldn't sit with him. They wouldn't eat with him. And as we know, it happens in corporations, he was then laid off. And you've also likely experienced a lot of personal and professional discrimination yourself. What would you tell people who say that there is no caste in the U.S.?
Like my last name, you wouldn't know my caste. So that is an upper caste last name. So that first itself shows we live in hiding. And then professionally, like I explained, in New York State, the case I filed, which shows how caste exists in New York, in the U.S. Also, like, we are aware of the Cisco case in California. We are also aware of New Jersey case. So, yeah, there is existence of caste. And unfortunately, there is no law to protect them, because they're minority within the minority. Like, if Indian Americans are minority, then the caste oppressed community is minority again. So it is difficult to prove that, you know, we need those laws, because like the client I filed case, he did not get justice. Other cases also are not getting justice. So ultimately, the objective is everybody should get equal rights. They should not be deprived of their rights. So that is ultimately the objective of law. We can't stop social discrimination by having these laws, but discrimination in workplace, in housing, in public access, that we can definitely stop and give them opportunity.
Thank you. Pavitra, my next question is to you. What differences did you see in how caste is practiced in Nepal and here in the U.S.? And also, can you give us some details about how caste operates at the intersection of labor exploitation of working class Dalit communities? And why the silence around this exploitation of working class Dalits further harms us?
There is nothing changed in Nepal and here, actually, if I say Dalit. As Swati mentioned, my dad, he tried to change my last name as well. D-A-S-H is his neighbor, ever you can figure out in any country, you know. So he make it D-A-S-H, right? That means he want to hide us, like from Dalit community. And many of our Dalit community members, they are trying to change their last name. But changing the last name is not changing the society or, you know, changing our own blood or anything. It goes like, you know, generation to generation, you know. My grandmom faced same thing, and I faced same thing in Nepal, right? And here, like if, here is, in Nepal, like if people know about I'm from Dalit, you know, they directly do whatever they want, right? They say it's like untouchable, you know, like on pure blood. They can, and as I mentioned before, like they don't want to sit with us, right? We have to sit separate. And if I have to go for someone else's house, I have to clean, you know, clean my stuff myself. I'm not able to go. I'm not like allowed to enter their house or my friend's house. But here, somehow a little bit different. I can enter a house. They could not say directly anything. But as soon as they know about, you know, I'm from Dalit community, even though, like, I here, like, I have a really huge chunk of, like, Brahmin community's friend here. And like, while they have to make any decision, they never put me in. Never. But while they need any support, they put me in the front all the time. Because they know, like, I work for Adhikar. I'm, you know, doing some services for them as well. And they can get benefit. They are around with me, and this is like, you are such a good person. You have a kind heart. Everything, right? Everything is used. But as soon as they know about my caste, they are not allow me to, you know, invite for the festival, like puja, those things, right? Oh, I like to invite you, but you know, I think you are working today, right? So that excuses is always there. So it's a different way they try to make it. But at the end, the common things is like in Nepal too, like they don't want to invite us, and here too, same thing. And here is a little bit smart way. In Nepal, this is like, oh, you Dalit, right? Finish. But here, oh, is there Dalit is here? I don't know that, you know, that's the different way they try to make it. But while I work with our, work in the salon, they recognize, whole day, like, I have to listen that, like, they use such a bad word for client, especially for black communities client, right? Such a bad word you cannot see. You cannot hear that word for the whole day. And then I recognize later, they always give me black communities client who give less tips, and then who seems like elderly, have to take care longer time. And those are the services is given for me. So, and in the workplace, I always feel like, you know, I feel always biased, and I check with other Dalit communities members as well, and they have similar. And here, like, some of our members, some of them, like, they don't live in Nepali community, Nepali-speaking community. They live in Chinese community because they don't ask, like, their caste or last name while they look roommate, right? So those are the situation is here.
Yeah, Pavitra, thank you for that reflection, because I want to speak about the hiding phenomena. My book, Coming Out as Dalit, deals with this whole concept of hiding your caste identity. And I grew up, like three of us Dalit women on this panel, all three of us hid our caste or have hidden our caste at some point. What does that speak about the existence of caste, both in South Asia as well as here in the U.S.? Back home, I grew up, my last name is also is a Savarna, dominant caste last name. It was chosen because my family wanted to make sure that nobody could find out my caste. I come from the manual scavenging caste community. The caste profession of our community is to clean toilets back in South Asia. And when you have that caste identity for thousands of years, that work becomes who you are. It's not just work. It is you. It is your identity. So exactly what Pavitra talked about, you know, the untouchability and entering homes and speaking to you from a distance, those kind of social rules exist in South Asia, of course, but I've seen them existing here in the United States. And I want to speak about the subtle discrimination that you raised, that we experience back home versus here. I would compare it, race and caste are not the same, but they're very parallel phenomena. In the South, how racism is very obvious and visible, and where black folks have talked about how they experience discrimination just openly, versus here, you know, in the North, where it is more hidden, it is subtle, like what Pavitra said, does caste really exist? We can, countless examples we can narrate where people say, does race, you know, can you be racist here in New York? But of course, all of us in this room know that we have encountered racism. And caste works in very similar ways, which I think is very important for us to understand. And again, I want to mention, the reason we don't know about these issues is not because they don't exist, but because not enough studies have been done around that. We don't speak about these issues. We have smaller populations, minority within a minority. We don't have political power in the same way that maybe Indian Americans do, and they definitely do. I mean, look at who's running this country at this point. So that is why platforms like these are extremely necessary. I want to ask you another question, Swati. If I can take that. You've been leading the efforts to bring a caste bill to New York State. How would the existence of such a law protect caste oppressed communities? And what about oppose this bill by calling it harmful to certain communities, especially Hindu communities?
So definitely this law will help. As I said, it is not trying to prevent social discrimination. What it will do is workplace discrimination, housing discrimination that Pavitra mentioned, and public access. So that is where we are trying to change the law, where people can go to work, feed their family without any issues at workplace, without losing their jobs. So like my client, he lost job. He was unemployed for 6 to 8 months. And he was immigrant. He was asylee. So caste issue is at the intersection of labor and immigration. And so that would help. If there was a law, my client would have got justice. He would not have left the job, or people would not have treated him that bad, fearing of losing their own jobs. But because lack of law is making it difficult for people. And those opposing the bill, I think we also have support from Hindu communities who are working with us, Hindus for Human Rights, Sadhna, Coalition of Progressive Hindus. So we are grateful that they are supporting us. They have been there for the lobby day, Hindu for Human Rights. They are equal partner. Like, so we do have support from a Hindu community as well. And so, yeah, so I think I answered right both questions.
Did. Okay. I mean, I just want to say that the pushback around this bill comes a lot from organized Hindu right, who claim to speak for all Hindu communities in the country. They don't just identify, you call them out as the Hindu right, they will push back on that. And when you tell them that there are other plural expressions of the faith by people who practice it, by people who are from dominant caste communities but who support the bill, they will attack you for mentioning those points of view. Hindus for Human Rights, that Swati mentioned, has been facing relentless attacks online by organizations who I don't want to mention because then they'll come after me on this public platform. But they had to put out a statement yesterday saying why they support this bill, why they support the efforts around caste, and why they do the work they do. Sikh Coalition has had to put out two statements in the last week alone supporting us because we've been getting relentlessly attacked online for just saying that caste exists. So that's how grave this problem here is in the U.S.
And also, like, some senators, like Senator Adobo or Senator Michael Guinaris, no matter how many people from their constituency call them, email them, they are still not co-sponsoring the bill. At least they should listen to their constituency members. But they are not, unfortunately. So,
yeah, something similar happened in California. And there have been reports which are, you know, have been published and verified in various sources, including Harper's Magazine, that Gavin Newsom, Governor Gavin Newsom, was pressured by Hindu right donors of the Democratic establishment, who basically told him, if you want to run for president, which he is, as we know, and you want our support, which is a substantial voting bloc there in California of the Hindu community, of the Indian American community, you want the dollars that we put in, you will veto this bill. And he ended up doing exactly that. And while the Hindu right doesn't have the same power or influence or presence here in New York State, they have reached out to senators like Michael Guinaris. We, of course, don't have confirmed reports, but we could only guess. There is, you know, why else would these senators ignore their own constituents and not even take meetings with us? So I think this is issues that work on a level of housing justice, of immigrant justice, of labor justice, and at the very highest level within the political establishment. Pavitra, I want to ask you, why does the larger South Asian organizing often tend to not include our voices? You are part of Adhikar. Adhikar is a Nepalese organization. But yet, we need Dalit voices that are centered. And how can South Asian communities organize better to include and center the needs of the most oppressed working class Dalit people?
I just want to make correction. Adhikar work for Nepali speaking. Speaking, not for only for Nepal, is from Bhutan, Nepal, India, Burma, and Tibet. So you know, myself and my colleagues as well, while we talk this, you know, try to prep these things and then see support for me, we talk about so many things from our own, like, reflection as well from Himalayan community, indigenous community, right, and Dalit community. These are the things. It's like, it's really, actually, we are practicing inside as well, like, to make sure, you know, we adjust everything, as very aware team we are now at Adhikar, right? And before too, this is such a long history. Like idol, our mentor, who is taking these things from beginning at Adhikar. So right now we are just trying to shaping these things and bringing up. So, you know, for my observation, larger South Asian organizing often fails to include Dalit voices because many species are still led by people with caste privilege, who do not recognize caste discrimination as a real and urgent issues. Sometimes people believe caste only exists back home in South Asia and not here in the United States, but that's not true. Others feel uncomfortable discussing caste because it challenges system of privilege and power within our own communities. For many working class Dalit people, survival comes first. We are working long hours, struggling with immigration issues, housing insecurity, labor exploitation, and discrimination. Because of fear and stigma, many people hide the identities to protect themselves. The silence is not because Dalit people do not want to speak. It is because society has made speaking unsafe. Too often, South Asian organizing highlight culture, success stories, and representation while ignoring the realities faced by working class communities, especially Dalit. Our voices are invited only symbolically, not meaningfully. We are really included in leadership position of decision-making spaces. If larger South Asian communities truly want to become more inclusive, they must first acknowledge that caste discrimination exists, including in the United States. They must create a space where Dalit people feel safe speaking openly without fear of judgment or exclusion. Inclusion also means sharing power, not just inviting Dalit people to event, but centering our experience, supporting Dalit leadership, and listening to working class voices directly. Organizations should invest in language access, labor rights, housing justice, mental health support, and immigration protection, because these are issues deeply connected to working class Dalit communities. Solidarity cannot exist without honesty. We cannot build a strong South Asia community while ignoring the people who continue to face discrimination within it. Real inclusion begins when Dalit people are just present in room, but respected, protected, heard, and empowered to lead.
Thank you, Pavitra. Swati, do you want to ask the question, or I can go for it? So I thought that this is a question that I wanted to answer as well. We have, unfortunately, only 3 minutes, so I'll try and answer it quickly and see if we have time for at least one audience question. So the question is, when I covered the Mamdani campaign as the first South Asian journalist on the ground, what gaps did I see in terms of inclusion of Dalit communities and our voices? I want to reiterate what Pavitra said, that a lot of Dalit people who are in this country, we form 2% based on very loose figures of the larger South Asian community, which itself is a minority. So in terms of numbers, we are not seen as consequential. We're not seen as influential. We are also immigrants, largely, because, like I said earlier, over 90% of Indian Americans who moved here in the movie that we saw in 1965, Senator John Liu called as the beginning of America becoming a true democracy. And within that wave of immigration, people who moved here were people who had access to opportunities, people who were able to solicit the kind of opportunities that the U.S. presented at that time. And also it reflected in the education patterns of the Indian communities back home, where most of people who were doctors, engineers, scientists were from dominant castes. Dalits weren't even allowed to touch books and still aren't allowed to touch books in many places. So when we come from these conditions, when we are first-generation immigrants, when we are afraid to use our voices because of what might happen, especially in the current milieu, then our organizing doesn't look the same as it should. Having said that, there is a very robust Ravidasya community here in Queens, which has been around for 40 years or so in the city, and they have created their own spaces. They have solicited partnership with the last mayor, Eric Adams, to announce April 14th as Dr. B.R. Ambedkar's Day, as Equality Day here in New York City. However, the gaps of inclusion also come from people who are doing the organizing. I think it's very important that we make sure to ask ourselves, are there Dalit voices included? Not just like what Pavitra said symbolically, but in the room, if we are giving them the same importance as everyone else. We have to ask this question about, is there Dalit representation within our coalitions? And if we are truly building power, are we leaving people behind? I think that concludes our time. Unfortunately, I did take up all the time for the questions, but I hope this was an informative session for all of you. Really appreciate your attention, and thank you so much for being here.